Champ week. 4 bits punched as we record here on Sunday night. It's been an active weekend in college basketball. Lots to get through. Carousel movement, pre-portal names, lots shaking with our final pod until we have a bracket in hand, Brad. Very exciting stuff, obviously, for both of us, although the bracket thing is not so great for your Friars at the moment, is it?
Well, I mean, everyone knows that we should expand the field to 80 teams. Okay, first, a couple of bracket things first.
Go ahead.
I am now at the point where I am 1,000% convinced that the tournament should be picked based on a publicly available formula. Pick what strength of record wins, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. But these freaking bracket boys have gone completely off the deep end. It's gotten to a point where they are doing their brackets to show other bracket boys weird little Jerry Palm wrinkles that they came up with.
Yes.
Like, I broke out of a Twitter posting hiatus to put some scrutiny on one bracket boy earlier. I think on Friday. And he said, okay, if Providence beat UConn, which obviously is a moot point now, because they would not be a lock. Like, what are you talking about? They would have 6 quadrant one wins, 3 of which quadrant 1A, 2 of which are on the road, and 4 of which without Bryce Hopkins, with no bad losses. That would be a complete lock. And he goes, well, no, their quadrant 2 record is bad. So a quadrant 1 win over the number 2 team in the country wouldn't lock you in because your quadrant 2 record is bad? So quadrant 1 is good. Quadrant 3 is fine. Quadrant 4 is fine. Quadrant 2 is bad. And that knocks you, that doesn't even make any sense. So he was essentially saying it would have been better to get like 3 wins at home against Maryland than it would to get 1 win at home against UConn. And now a formula could tell us for certain whether that is true or not, right? Assigning a numerical value to these wins could tell us, you know, actually, yes, 3 wins over Maryland is better than 1 win over UConn, but I highly doubt that.
Well, so real quickly, again, I mean, I do try to think of things sometimes in like the form of like odds, right? Like, so I fire up BovadaSportsbook.com, right? And I try to bet. Like, you know, let's just say Providence would be a, you know, 2-point home favorite against Maryland, right?
Yeah.
And you parlayed, you know, Providence minus 150 3 times. What odds would you get versus Providence, you know, plus 300 or plus 450, probably plus 350, right? Was what it was against UConn, right? Something like that, right? Like, what are those odds? What's the comparison in odds? And my guess is the odds are like relatively comparable.
Right, but that's in favor of my formula idea.
Correct.
The current way is to be just like, eh.
Well,
feels like this point is an issue. Like, right. Oh, Texas A&M, you have too many bad losses. You know, that's an issue. Oh, Wake Forest, your road record's too bad. That's an issue. But just the picking and choosing, the arbitrary nature, fact that these people don't have a set of principles, you know, they don't evaluate this thing, you know, this like a formula would, and like how you just described the UConn Maryland scenario. And then someone, other Friar fan who is pretty insightful, guy, Divine Friars, was like, okay, so they have Georgia's at 101 in the net. If Georgia went to 100, then our quadrant 2 record would improve, so that would be good, right? Like, nah, it wouldn't make much of a difference. It can't be both ways. Either we have to improve our quadrant 2 record, or
no.
What?
Yes. Like, look, I'm with you. I think the thing that's hard, and I think this is the thing with every, right, because this is what we're running into with the net right now, right? Everyone has decided that the net is a bad metric because the net is overvaluing beating bad teams by a lot, right? That's the narrative, right? So the net is a bad setup, for that reason, right? So we get a bracket, we get a new formula, and again, maybe the formula says beating UConn once is more important than beating Maryland three times, right? So that will happen, and we'll be like, all right, well, you know, that's good. And then after like a couple of years, like I'm trying to think of a team that would be an example.
Syracuse is still 40th in the strength of record.
Right. Like, or yeah, but so yeah, Syracuse. Or like, or maybe our metric just overvalues great wins, right? So like Butler or UCF is in the field. And everyone's like, well, this is stupid because it overvalues the top of your resume. It should really be the depth. You know, one of the things, and I think we'll get into Indiana State in a bit. One of the things that someone I had a good kind of back and forth about was, you know, the idea that like the top and the bottom of a resume is overanalyzed. That really we should be looking at the middle because that's the true performance. So Indiana State, yes, you know, they lost to, you know, yes, they have one bad loss and, you know, no, they don't have an elite win, but they dominate almost every team. So they should be a tournament team. And the, you know, the thing he used was like, all right, like their, you know, quad three record, they're 10-0 in quad three. That's incredibly hard to do. And again, I agree. It's hard to be 10-0 in quad three. But like, again, so we say, okay, that's important. Well, then look up, guess who's 9-0 in quad three? Ole Miss. Does anyone want Ole Miss in the tournament? Guess who's 9-1 in quad three? Syracuse, as Brad just mentioned. Does that mean we want Syracuse in the tournament, right? Or you get even further with the Indiana State thing in particular. Like, people say they should be in the tournament because they're fun. Okay. Well, number one, fun. Like, Iowa scores a million points and can't get a stop. Does that make them fun? Wright State's 160th in KenPom. Should they be in the tournament because they're 34th in offense, but 350th in defense? Like, what are we doing? Like these are just arbitrary. Like, it's so arbitrary.
Right, so they have no principle as to, like, okay, Indiana State's 10-0 in quadrant three. Providence is 3-0 in quadrant three. Or projected to be 3-0 because they play Georgetown on Wednesday. So is it better to be 10-0 in quadrant three and 5-5 in quadrant two, or is it better to be, you know, 8-9 in quadrant two and 3? And, you know, there's no set of principles that is comparing the different factors of NCAA inclusion. And so it's people picking, you know, which ones they want to emphasize to put whatever, you know, people are working backwards, like they're putting their teams in, and then when faced with scrutiny, they do the circular logic thing that we've talked about for years. But that is why I'm currently on, and I don't see any other way except for formula only. Like, we should be able to see, okay, Iowa has lost to Illinois. Where did they move? And not, where did Joey Brackets have him? Where did Jerry Palm have him? Where did Bracket Dave have him? You know, all subjective. And then my second issue with them is I don't think I've seen a single bracketology. Now, I've seen like 50 now. They all pop on my Twitter. I don't think I've seen a single one that had the cut line the same. Doesn't that seem statistically improbable? That we know the criteria of inclusion, we have the past tournaments that we're working on, but everyone's first or last eight in and first four out are all different.
It is a bit strange.
And I don't even look further up the board, obviously. I don't look at their sevens through tens and stuff. But it figures people are being different to be different. They put their own spin on their little bracket. Anyway, we can get to actual basketball now if you want, or we can keep doing resume comparisons.
So, look, I do want to do the Indiana State thing off the top because I feel like that's the story of college basketball right now. As crazy as that sounds, right? Like, Everyone is talking about Indiana State. Indiana State loses in the Missouri Valley Championship game to Drake. Close game at the end was a blowout for Drake much of the way. Indiana State goes on this incredible run. Luke doesn't quite have enough to get over the finish line, right? Indiana State's resume, their metrics are very strong across the board, but they're 1-4 against Quad One. Their resume is really only based on wins they had in the Valley. Two against Bradley, one against Drake. They have one terrible loss to Illinois State. I know it was mentioned to me by Jordan Majeski, who we're big fans of, that Jason Kent was out. Jason Kent's like their defensive wing slasher, switchable guy in the second half against Illinois State and then all the Southern Illinois game. So that's a feather in their cap. And I was like, look, like we really can't rely on the committee to determine that because everyone has these things. I mean, you and I, we've been over the asterisk thing all the time, right? It's crazy. But the totality of Indiana State's resume is they're a team that people seem to like, right? Everyone likes Indiana State because they're the Sycamores and it's baby blue and they have this fat guy who's really good in Robbie Avila. Josh Schertz, people seem to like him. But I'm not trying to be different, right? I like Indiana State. I have no objection to them being a tournament team. But I don't understand why the hype is so much greater about Indiana State than Drake. James Madison, right? What is the difference? Drake has the new Doug McDermott, right? They're 27-6. Their coach is unbelievable. They can't schedule anyone. They played Nevada in the non-conference and beat the brakes off of them in Vegas. Shit. No one gave a shit about Drake. And then this week, everyone kind of decided I guess Drake should be in the conversation too, right? But it wasn't anything that they accomplished in the last 2 weeks that made that a thing. It was just I guess probably should put in Drake. The whole thing is just weird to me. And again, I do not understand why there is such a hive for Josh Schertz and Robbie Avila, but there isn't a hive for Donovan Dent at New Mexico or Isaiah Stevens at Colorado State or Tucker DeVries or Terrence Edwards at James Madison.
Avila looks weird.
Right. Literally, that's it. And again, he's fun. I get it. I enjoy watching him too. But if Isaiah Stevens walked around in a fat suit, would he get would they make the tournament? If Isaiah Stevens put on a Raymond Felton ass, would that make him would that make Colorado State March's darling? It's just bizarre.
It's every year there is the Indiana State, and I can only assume that had Indiana State won, then Drake would have been that team until James Madison loses on Monday or something. But there was Illinois State with Dan Mullen, right, where he's trying to schedule games on Twitter. Feel like there was some Belmont teams. There was a UNC Greensboro team. I think that was the year that COVID canceled the tournament. But, the people who do the strength of record, formula stuff were like, oh, they had to be in. If Princeton loses next Sunday, we'll hear the same about them as well. Who was 28 in strength of record when I checked earlier. I'm sure that if we racked our brains, we could think that there's one or two examples every year. People like the underdog. People like these different teams being in, which I can empathize with. Between Wake Forest and New Mexico too, and teams that we don't usually see in. But at some point, you can't just keep being so transparent.
I do sort of respect that the Indiana State crowd has dropped all pretense of it's about the resume, and it's just flat out people being they have fun fat guy who can pass.
And their metrics are good. They're gonna be better than all the bubble teams, except for Colorado and Nova and stuff. But
I mean, yes, but they're
a fun team. Colorado is very fun. as someone who was rooting for Oregon so heavily earlier, and was rooting against them when they played Stanford as well. Colorado, they play fast. They have a, you know, Tristan Da Silva is like unstoppable. You know, they have like, they're flying up and down the court even without Cody Williams. And, you know, that was a very enjoyable team to watch.
Yeah.
So let's put Colorado in instead of Indiana State. I guarantee you Colorado would mash them on the first four Dayton game.
Right. And again, I have no issue. Like, you stick Indiana State, I'm not going to be upset if Indiana State's in Dayton. Like, I'd be happy about it because they're a good team. They're a good team. They're exciting to watch. They're a good style, whatever. I just don't feel so strongly about it the way that everyone else does. And, like, again, people say, oh, they didn't get opportunities. Indiana State played Alabama and Michigan State. They lost both games by double figures.
And I saw someone.
I've also said, sorry, Brad, I cut you off. I just had one more thing on Indiana State. I've also seen a lot of people that like are convinced like that is the team that's like the super sleeper. Like they're the ones that's the most dangerous in the tournament. Like historically, the teams that don't defend and like are fun offenses that take a ton of threes are not the teams that like do well in the tournament. Right? Creating a bunch of extra possessions and shooting a bunch of threes usually does not win you games at the end of the tournament.
Because the more possessions you play, the more the talent differential rears its head.
Correct. Right. I mean, honestly, I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of the teams that have had success in, like, you know, it's kind of remarkable the number of teams that have had success in the NCAA tournament who aren't top seeds in their own leagues. Right. Like, there's a lot of those teams that
St. Peter's.
Right. Yeah. They're the two or the three, and oftentimes it's like the team that like grinds you out, and so. You know, individually, you have more variance because there's fewer possessions, right? Occasionally, right? I mean, that's part of why Virginia lost, right? If Virginia played an 80-possession game against UMBC, they might not have lost that game, right? But if you can force it into a grinder tempo and you can be disruptive and then you can lead with, like, 12 minutes to go, and then there's game pressure, right? And then you just hope you make threes, right? Trying to, like, track meet these teams doesn't work. Right? I mean, they got Michigan State literally can't score right now. Michigan State torched Indiana State.
Right. What I was going to say is, you know, people are simultaneously saying, oh, Michigan State looks like crap, which they do. Get them out of the tournament. How is their net so high? Why are we having these mediocre power teams in? And then on the same side, they're saying, well, Indiana State can play with the power teams because they kept it close with Michigan State for most of the game. So which is it? Is Michigan State a deserving inclusion? Or is the fact that Indiana State kept it close with Michigan State inherently mean that their fates are linked?
It's truly pretty bizarre.
People just want the underdog, and they're going to throw out all logic and reason to get that, but.
It's so funny because like everyone is like rooting against all these Power Five bubble teams, right? Everyone is ready. Everyone's ready to like kill Villanova. Everyone's trying to kill Virginia. Everyone's trying to kill, you know, all these teams. The only high major bubble teams that like seem to have a little bit of juice that people like is like there's a little bit of love for Colorado, and then the Pitt fans. The Pitt fans are very aggressive. Maybe it's just that I follow Tristan, and so I get like all the like replies to Tristan's tweets and whatever. Shout out to Tristan if you're listening to this. I still don't think Pitt's a tournament team. But the Pitt fans are convinced that they should be in.
I mean, Pitt is probably a tournament quality team.
Yes.
But right, they played the shitty non-conference. They lost. You know, they have bad losses, and the ACC doesn't give you the wins.
Right.
Because what they did at Duke and what, at Virginia? Was that it? Or I don't remember.
But. Yes, it was at Duke, at Virginia.
I think T-Rank, I think, has them in, right. But everyone else has them kind of next four out because of that. But
the thing with Pitt, and it's actually good, is that Pitt and Wake are on the same in the same bracket. So number one, that's good because they're the four and the five. So that's good because number one, that means that both of those teams get a rare quad one opportunity, right? Like Wake can get a quad one. By realistically, that's an
neutral court,
right? Wake, Pitt, Both those teams are top 50. So that's guaranteed to be a quad one game, right? So both those teams play each other. The winner has life. The loser is cooked, right? Because both teams are on the outside looking in. Wake, you know, my sweet prince decided to lose to Georgia Tech. And so they're in deep trouble. But they did beat Clemson. So, right, so now you look up and you're like, all right, Wake and Pitt are playing an elimination game. Winner gets the crack at North Carolina. And the winner also gets to, like, have some prayer that on Selection Sunday they'll be selected, right? Like, realistically, like, Wake Pitt winner is probably a first four out team at worst.
Okay.
And then if they beat Carolina, then they're in the tournament.
Right.
Which is going to be hard, but, you know, who knows? Do we know that Carolina cares?
Which, you know, not to bring it back to Providence, but, like, I saw people saying that they need to make the Big East Championship to make the NCAA tournament. So they're saying if they beat Creighton on neutral court and then lost to Marquette on neutral court, they wouldn't be in. First of all, that's not going to happen. Like, they're going to lose to Creighton. They look like shit. But I ran on T-Rank, and they had this was pre-Bid Thief. But they had, if we beat Georgetown and Creighton and lose to Marquette, we'd be the last team in. So I guess they are right. But it feels like adding a neutral court win over a top 10 team would be pretty nice shot in the arm for a team that's probably five or six out right now.
Yeah, that'd give you a chance.
Yeah.
Okay. Just the rest of our – why don't we just do the rest of the bubbles wrap up, right? So Colorado had a good week. They swept the Oregon schools. They're, I think, going to be in most brackets on Monday. The other thing for them, though, is the Pac-12 tournament has so few good teams that if they lose their first game, they're probably in trouble, right?
They have no wins. That's the thing.
They have no elite wins. So Colorado, incidentally, their first game Thursday night is either Utah or Arizona State. Like, if they play Utah, that's, I mean, again, that works out well because that's functionally elimination game, right? Like, if Utah has any hope they have to beat Colorado, I think they're probably cooked. But if they have any hope, and if Colorado loses that game, they might be out. I think they're probably out if they lose that game. Because you can't assume that no one else is going to help themselves. So
right.
It'd and be really
good. In the same exact boat as Wake Forest and Pitt is Iowa and Ohio State. 7-10.
Right. So one advances. I think those teams are further back than Wake and Pitt, but one advances to, like, you know, playing a real game.
Is Illinois.
Correct. And if they win that game on a neutral, then they have real life. And if they don't, they have no shot. Right. So that's valuable. Right. The other bubble teams. Who else we have?
Villanova. Yep. Villanova has DePaul, which is a perfect opportunity to raise the metrics. You have neutral court, you get a little boost here. 322nd ranked in the net, DePaul. So let me see what T-Rank has that at now for a spread. I don't know if Bovada has a spread out for them yet, but
I don't think that they do, but I would bet anything on
Villanova. All right, so Villanova is, according to T-Rank, only has to win by 19 to move up. So that's a good spot for them. But then they play Marquette, who may be without Tyler Kolek. And if they get the two wins, DePaul and Marquette, I think they're probably in.
They're a lock if they beat Marquette, I think.
Yeah, because remember, they have a win at Creighton. They have neutral UNC, neutral Texas Tech. Memphis is aging better. Even Maryland is, you know, quad two at this point. They beat Seton Hall as well. They swept Providence. So adding a neutral Marquette win, I think, would certainly do it. Super high metrics too.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the only way that Villanova gets left out is if they're 18-15, which is three games over 500. That's not ever good enough, right?
I think that has been
like the bar where you have to be that to have any hope. And then they would like the other thing with Villanova is they haven't beaten anyone in months. Like Villanova's best win is at Providence since like mid January.
But I mean, like they won at Creighton in Big East play. I mean that's the second best win you can get, right? This happened to be early in the schedule.
Correct. Yes, neutral North Carolina plus road Creighton is a very potent combination, and it's why they have a good chance if they can get there. I think they'll have a decent chance for 18-15, but I do think it's gonna be a hard sell at 18-15 because with three quad three losses, right?
Right.
Like, I have a hard time with that. Right, like we're gonna say this team belongs. Right, like it's tricky. Like you're gonna tell me, oh, you know, they played such a hard schedule, so they can lose 15 games. It's okay, but they also get to have three shitty losses. Like that to
right,
me.
Wait, why not put Ohio State in over Nova? Right.
Virginia, I think, is gonna make it regardless.
St. John's?
Quad two. St. John's, it's almost interesting. Like, I kind of would have rather have, like, one more DePaul buffer game. But they get out of the top. They get to the top five.
Play Seton Hall.
Correct.
Well, I think it's locked either way, Seton Hall.
They are locked either way. I think St. John's is winning in, losing, like, good chance of Dayton. But I think they're probably in.
And then we have some of the new bubble teams, we'll call them, Mississippi State, TCU, and Michigan State.
I think all will make the tournament. Mississippi State's the most dangerous to miss out. They have to, if they could win one game, that'd be good.
What about TCU with their terrible Q1 record, their terrible non-con strength of schedule? I mean, that Georgetown game, late November, is literally the deciding factor between whether they make the tournament or not.
It is nuts. It is really nuts. I think all those teams are probably okay, right? There's not like Colorado State, theoretically, if they lost to San Jose on Wednesday, could be like precarious. T-Rank hates Colorado State for some reason. Like, T-Rank only has Colorado State as, like, a 65% chance of making the tournament, which is, like, bananas to me.
Well, wasn't that something you were saying with the unbalanced schedule?
Yeah. I mean, look, the Utah State won the league's fair and square, and UNLV had a great year. But it was a huge deal the way that the schedule played out. Colorado State went 10-8 in the league because they played every team in the top seven twice, and they played Fresno once and San Jose once, right? New Mexico went 10-8 in the league because they played every team in the top seven twice, and they played, I believe, Air Force only once and Fresno.
The game wasn't pretty.
Right? Yes, they lost the game, right? Like New Mexico and Colorado State each had a bad loss that cost them not further, right? Those teams should be 11-7, theoretically. New Mexico lost to Air Force. Colorado State lost at Wyoming. We understand that. That's fine. That being said, a big reason that UNLV is 12-6 is that they played, I think they only had Boise once. Yeah, they only had Boise once, and then they only had Utah State once, right? So UNLV gets a huge bump, and so does Utah State, and so does Boise State, because they only played one of the top seven teams once, right? And I think Utah State dodged the two Nevada schools, right? So Nevada, who's playing as well as anyone in the league, right? I was very skeptical of Nevada. They've been phenomenal, though, lately. Utah State only plays them once, and Utah State only played UNLV, who's beaten everybody once. So then, you know, that's how, like, the league is won this year, and that's why they're going to 20-game schedule next year. if Colorado State lost to San Jose, maybe they'd be in Dayton, but I'm pretty sure they're in. Like, I think I tweeted that they were in, like, maybe Dayton at the worst, and, like, Kerry Miller's like, I don't know. They're, you know, they're only 4-7 away from, you know, on the road. I'm like, they have 4 road wins. I was like, what are we doing? They have 4 road wins. And, I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. So, look, I don't know. I'm trying not to be, like, overreactionary about the whole thing. Because I'm pretty sure Colorado State is going to beat San Jose State and be fine. But, like, the concept that Colorado State, who has a neutral win over Creighton, beat a bubble team in Colorado, beat Washington on a neutral, beat Boston College on a neutral, and has 4 road wins, is not good enough away from home to be a tournament lock? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I think they'll be safe. I think TCU could be made an example of. And Mississippi State, I think, has lost 5 straight games, and LSU's been feisty, who they have in the first round of the SEC tournament.
Yes.
So those are the ones. But I mean, the real elephant in the room is, does the committee care about these results, conference tournament results? And if so, when do they stop caring? Which is probably point one, the absolute top of the list about why we need this to be formula-based, is that some of the biggest games just don't count because they don't have time to draw new pictures.
It's so ridiculous.
Sorry, go on.
So, yeah, look, I don't know. I think overall, if there was a bubble team, you know, a lot of the sports books, I believe Bovada does as well, a lot of the sports books let you gamble on, like, who will get in. Like, I would bet, like, if you were giving me even money on all these teams, like, I would take Colorado for sure. I think I would take Indiana State as a Dayton team. Look, I think the other thing, again, we've talked about is, right, we're saying, okay, maybe Mississippi State could be an example of TCU. Part of that is, like, how many bids are there out there, right? Are there bid stealers, right? We already lost one potential bid stealer with James Madison now being auto bid or bust. We lost a, you know, we might lose an A-10 bid stealer. Sounds like Javon Bennett, the point guard for Dayton, will play. That's a big deal. You know, if they win that conference tournament, that shrinks, you know, that opens the bubble up by a spot. So I don't know. Like, I'm... Certainly, you know, the FAU thing with the AAC. So look, we'll see. I would say I'm confident there. I will say the one team that, like, has gotten, like, basically zero traction in, like, Lenardi's bracketology, who I don't quite understand why, is Texas A&M. Like, I don't quite understand. I guess their wins are probably slightly worse than Villanova, but I don't understand how Villanova's, like, in the field. And Texas A&M is, like, way out in Lenardi's bracket. And I know they're closer in other places. But Texas A&M's beaten Iowa State on a neutral, Tennessee at home, Kentucky at home, and Florida at home. And they won at Ohio State and at SMU.
Yeah.
And they're out because they have 4 quad 3 losses.
But Villanova has 3.
Villanova has 3 quad 3 losses, and they're fine. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And they're, like, they torched Ole Miss last week. They torched them on the road. Beat them by 50, like 30. So, like, I kind of feel like A&M's the team that's not getting talked about a lot right now that, like, will be in the field when all said and done. Especially because their first SEC tournament game is Ole Miss, right? So that should pad them. They should win that game. Ole Miss is a, you know, going into the shell. They're done. So, you know, what's the bracket look like after that? Let me look, but
two
I think they're 2 wins from getting in, probably. Like, if they win both, like, they should be – if they get 2 wins, they'll probably be all right. So A&M gets Kentucky second. If they win that game, they have to get.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think even if they beat Ole Miss and lost to Kentucky, they should be in the mix.
Yes.
But then, you know, not – none of this is in a vacuum, right? Because if Villanova beats Marquette, you got to put Villanova ahead of Texas A&M.
Yes.
So, we'll see.
Let's see. Some conference tournament things that I would like to mention. The one seeds are all getting destroyed.
I think there's Appalachian State played with fire yesterday, and then they get beat today. Was that where you were going first, or did you have another school?
Well, I was just going to summarize where we are. Right. So Appalachian State lost as a one seed. They were, you know, probably the best one seed to lose so far. High Point was a legit one seed. They lost in the semifinals. Eastern Washington lost while we've been on the pod to 10 seed Sac State. Eastern Washington has won its league both the last 2 years and lost in the quarterfinals both years.
Well, you need to do the ladder bracket. I noticed both the WAC and the Big West have gone ladder as well.
You
know, like, yeah, WCC style where the...
Yes. Yeah. So let's see. The one seed in the OVC lost. Technically, Moorhead was the 3. Little Rock got the 1. It was a tie. You know, obviously Eastern Kentucky got picked off in the A-Sun. I believe the only one seed like standing in all the conference tournaments that are like running like actively right now is Samford.
Yeah, right. Who was Horizon League one seed again?
Oakland, excuse me. Oakland's the other one. Because they got the Oakland's 1, but then the 2, 3, and the 4 got beat.
And then in the Summit League, is South Dakota State still in it?
They are. Yes, they lost yesterday. So my fact is getting – or they won yesterday, so my fact is getting destroyed.
But a lot Central Connecticut's out.
Yeah, Central Connecticut's out.
There are some weird ones, like the NEC and the OVC, where like Moorhead and Merrimack are so far ahead of everyone in the metrics, but they weren't the one seed. How about in the Sun Belt? We'll have Brian Hodgson, the great recruiting wizard. I forgot the roster he built there for year one. He's going to be in the championship probably against James Madison.
Yes. That was one of those classics, right? I mean, you get into a one-off situation. They're just like way more talented than App State is. And Freddie Hicks made a big shot. Hodgson's really just the new Richie Riley in that league, right? Honestly, looking back, I probably should have bet that. Like, I think the line at Bovada was like 3.5. Like, I don't know. They're better. Like Arkansas, like Appalachian State have been like playing with its food a lot. That just felt like one of those coming. So it sucks because they had a great year. And I think Kearns is a good candidate for stuff. I don't know what. Like, I don't know if he can get West Virginia now without making the tournament this year. I think that's like probably Byington. But he's done a great job. Like, I'm trying to think of what, like Charlotte would have been a great hire. But, you know, obviously they went internal.
What about, like, Southern Illinois? Or is that too
I don't far? Think he would take Southern Illinois. Maybe he would. One would be a really good – one where he'd be really, like, a potential decent hire would be Vandy. Because he's already been – he's at Wofford, so it's kind of, like, higher academic, like, private. That could work. So – I don't know. We'll see. He's done a great job. I think there'll be a lot of coaches that want Vandy, though. I think Vandy might get, like, Nico. Vandy might get, like I could see Vandy interviewing Drew Valentine. I could see Vanderbilt interviewing Chris Holtman, Chris Mack, Bucky McMillan. Like, there's going to be a lot of people who want that job.
Should we transition to search season? To steal the line from Curry.
Do we want to get through a couple of the big games of the weekend first?
Yeah, go for it.
Like Duke Carolina was obviously a big result. I know you said you didn't get a chance to watch much. Did you have do you have thoughts on this result? Like, it feels like Duke had been like flying on the radar. People were starting to like get back in. Carolina wins in their building. That feels like a big deal, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, for all their talent, Duke just hasn't scared people like they should have this year. The talent hasn't materialized. Right. And when you compare them to the top teams in the SEC and the Big 12, they don't come close in terms of scary vibes.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I guess my issue is, look, if you're Duke, this is the golden chance. Your place is jumping. You're favored. Like, this is the one time that you have to win a big game. It's your rival. And you come out and you give up 31 points to Cormac Ryan. Like, seriously. Like, you held RJ Davis and Armando Bacot in single digits. And you lost at Cameron Indoor Stadium to your biggest rival. Again, credit to North Carolina. I think North Carolina's a really good team. I think they should be in that conversation for the one seed. They've had a great year, right? Again, take nothing away from Carolina. Try not to be a jerk to Cormac Ryan. I like Cormac Ryan. He's a good player. And I like Carolina because I think Carolina's role allocation is great. But if you're Duke, like, how do you lose this game? How? Like, they just have too many guys on the floor who are not scary. Ryan Young does not scare you at all offensively. Mark Mitchell does not scare you at all. Sean Stewart doesn't do anything, right? Even Proctor, like, Proctor had 14 in this game. You're not like it twitching in fear about Tyrese Proctor.
No, you are not. And I mean, even Filipowski. Like, I see him as like a lottery pick all over the place. I don't see how that's even like remotely possible, but I'm certainly not a draft guy. And the whole tripping incident, that's really the only play I saw from the game was the trip that I've seen now 1,000 times.
That was, I don't know. This Duke team just has bad vibes, man.
Trying to think of some big games that we were on.
Kentucky, Tennessee was a big one.
I missed that window too. I'm not going to a massacre at 8:00. I mean, UConn looks really good. I can talk about that.
Yeah, go for it. Hit me with
that. I mean, they got three elite shooters. Stephon Castle's coming along as a glue guy, and Klingon's enormous. That's basically all it is.
Yeah, look, like, I saw them against Marquette, and I was very impressed. Again, it's much easier to say you're not beating UConn when they never miss a shot, right? They went, I think they made, what, 11 threes yesterday against Providence. They were 13
for 26. They made them all. Yeah.
They were 13 for 26 against Marquette, but I think at one point they were 13 for 21 or 13 for 22, right? Like, when you have that level of space and guys aren't missing, like, good luck. And a lot of that's been Caravan. Caravan's been hot.
When they Caravan's get wide hot, open looks.
Right. Watch out. Like,
feet set, wide open off, you know, 15 screens and three passes, and it's just, oh, like, oh my God.
It is fascinating. Like, I'll say this. I do think it's wild that I don't know if it's been made enough. Like, the whole thing with UConn running a million sets, like, everyone just says that in a vacuum, but it's never really discussed in terms of, like, overall, like, impact on the sport, right? Like, when Nate Oates plays, like, five out and, like, you know, runs it up and down, everyone's like, well, everyone copycat this, right? No one says, well, why doesn't everyone do what UConn does and run sets, right? Like, the whole trend in basketball is, like, free-flowing, ball screen, you know, run, you know, don't run anything, just space the floor, play in concepts. And UConn goes down the floor every trip, runs a play, gets great offense, great looks. Why isn't there, like, a narrative about this? I don't know. I just think it's fascinating.
I've been trying to
the sets, yeah.
I've been trying my best with this narrative. You know, I think the main reason why Providence's offense was so terrible this year was that they're doing concepts on a team that doesn't have enough shot creators. You know what you do with a team that doesn't have enough shot creators? You run some sets, get people looks based off screens and ball movement and player movement. It, you know, design spots on the floor. Not, you know, in a college game, you're not going to have a team unless you're Kentucky or, you know, a team that can really, really hoard the talent. That's going to be able to play, you know, free flowing concept offense while also having a respectable defense.
Look,
I'm sure you could find like five guys, 6'5" and under, and play a free flowing offense. You're just going to get crushed on the other end.
I guess the question I would have is this, Brad. Like, if Providence had Bryce Hopkins and Providence had, like, a slightly better point guard, they could absolutely play like this and have a good offense. Right?
No.
The reason their offense stinks is because Jaden Pierre, Corey Floyd, and Rich Barron play a shit ton of minutes.
No. T-Rank, from the start of the season through January 3rd, which is the date that Hopkins got hurt, we were 171st in offense. 171.
Okay.
January 4th to the end of the year, we were 100th.
But that's still with bad players around the three of them.
We were better without Hopkins. You know why?
Because you put another shooter on the floor.
What was that?
Because you put another shooter on the floor.
Exactly. The turnovers went way down. I don't know if that's actually true statistically, but aesthetically, we went from turning it over all the time to missing open three-pointers all the time. Or, like, semi-open three-pointers.
Right, but, like, why? Again, I'm just not convinced that, like, Providence can't recruit a better player than Corey Floyd and Rich Barron.
Rich Barron's good, dude. He's going to be a stalwart for years to come.
But Rich Barron's like an Isaiah Jackson.
No, Rich Barron is going to be
like 7 points game.
No, he's going to be a double-figure scorer, easily.
He can't do anything. He just stands in the corner.
That's because Kim doesn't run him off any screens.
He can't move.
That's what the screens are for. Set one and get a back screen and flare for three, or run off a floppy, or set a down screen. You know, Hurley would have him set a down screen, then get a flex screen and then pop out and then do a flare cut and then, you know, go backdoor and then get a dribble handoff and then get you a wide open three.
You need to get in contact with Kim. I need to just start sending him videos that Eric Fawcett tweets out about of just different teams running good stuff.
Cause I mean, like, Kim's always like, oh, our immaturity, that's the exact reason why you can't have a free-flowing offense, dude, because college players are immature. You got to run some sets.
Anyway, I think UConn's really good. I think UConn would be, like, the easy choice to say they're winning it all if they didn't win it all last year, right? And that's bad. Like, that doesn't make sense mathematically, but it's true, right? It just feels like there's a good chance they'll lose.
Right, because half the team is different, but half is back. So, you know, Caravan was a starter, and Newton was a starter, obviously, and then Klingon played a huge role in reserve, and Diarra was like the ninth man. Now Diarra is like the sixth man. You add a freshman and a transfer starter, and then you're bringing in Samson Johnson off the bench. So it's like half guys who played in a championship versus half new guys, basically.
Yes. So let me ask you this. Big picture, right? We can talk Tennessee, Kentucky in a bit if we want. Obviously, that was a big game. It was a game that had a lot of juice. That was a game that, you know, both teams seem like they're potential title contenders, whatever. I'm going to ask you today, if you could go on Bovada and you could place a bet on one team to win the national championship, knowing that in a week you'll have a bracket and you can decide based on that who you think. But, like, right now, like, regardless of draw in your head who's winning the championship, who's your pick?
I think I'm going UConn. My only worry with Houston is such a physical team. Now they have no depth. Are they going to get, you know, is Jawan Roberts and France is going to get in foul trouble, and then like with Tuggerud, where do they go there? And then that offense is still not, you know, I don't think their offense is at the level of UConn and Purdue's.
So I'm curious your thoughts on this. I've seen a lot of people picking Tennessee. Then they lose to Kentucky, again, those people off the bandwagon. I saw a lot of people picking Arizona. Then they lost to USC, right? That's why, in my feeling, I kind of feel like I have to pick one of Purdue, UConn, and Houston, because they're the only three teams that have been consistent enough. But I don't, there's something about Tennessee that just feels like a title team. Like, they're mixed.
I don't feel that way as much. I think the thing is, like, you just can't quit Arizona. Like, every other week, they're, like, losing these shitty teams, but just their size and their guards is just so appealing. But then one of their guards is Caleb Love. So, as much as I like Creighton, I don't think Creighton has a shot. Maybe Auburn, but they've been terrible against the good teams. I mean, all signs are pointing to, you know, UConn or Houston. I guess Purdue too. But I mean, no one's actually gonna pick Purdue.
I might pick Purdue.
That's a lot of consecutive blown games against double digit seeds, but I guess the streak has to stop eventually, right?
Well, I was very scared when Braden Smith got hurt today, but he's fine. For a second there, though, I was very, very worried.
Do we have our, like, 8 through 11 seed that we think can at least make the Final Four?
Everyone was picking Florida, and then they lost to Van. I still think Florida is, like, the right type of team, right? They can score. They're big. They have old guards. They can shoot. Like, that's the type of mix that usually works.
What about Texas?
That's an interesting one to bring up.
I haven't watched a ton of Texas. I watched them a lot early when they stunk. I haven't watched a ton of Texas with Dylan Dessou.
So, I watched them play Baylor when they, like, completely imploded. And I was like, I was still kind of impressed. Like, the thing that's different with them right now is that, like, Asemus has been phenomenal. Like, he can really, really go. Like, I thought he's been better than I expected he would be. And then Dessou is a great player. And then they have guys who really defend.
Right.
So it's like,
that's why I put Texas in my top 10 in the preseason. I said that we're going to put 4 elite defenders around Asemus and just tell Asemus to go score. Like, I think I like that combination.
I mean, like, they've been nuclear offensively lately. Like, their last 4 games offensively, Oklahoma scored 94 points, 1.36 points per possession. Baylor scored 85 points, 1.2 points per possession. Oklahoma State, 81 points, 1.23 points per possession. Texas, 81 points scored, 1.16 points per possession. It's pretty good.
And I guess, I'm trying to think of any more. I don't buy any of the Big Ten teams.
I kind of buy Illinois. Like, it's funny. So I was at Illinois-Purdue this past week. Purdue wins that game. It was really impressive, whatever. Edie played as well as he's played. Like, you know, I was overall very, like, all right, Purdue played great. Brayden was awesome. Brayden hit clutch shots. Lance Jones was good. Gillis made big threes. Edie was unstoppable. But I also, like, looked up. I was like, all right, like, Coleman Hawkins didn't play great, and Terrence played, like, bad. And they still probably, like, you know, they're basically in a toss-up at the U4 with one of the two best teams in the country. And yeah, they're at home, whatever, but, like, I don't know. Like, Illinois can really space it. They can score the ball like crazy. I don't know if they can defend well enough, but they're pretty good. Like, Doug, and by the way, obviously Iowa's not a great team. No one's saying that. But what Illinois did on the road today at Iowa was, like, pretty darn impressive. Like, nothing to play for on the road against a team with everything to play for. And you really, like, destroyed them. Like, completely, like, sucked the life out of them. Did a great job defensively against one of the best offenses in college basketball. Like, that was, like, a sneaky, impressive result for Illinois today. So I think I kind of buy Illinois. I definitely don't buy Michigan State. Definitely don't buy Wisconsin.
Northwestern could have knocked Michigan State out of the tournament had they won.
Man.
Was that Thursday?
Yeah. Or no, it was Tuesday. And they had a wide open shot, too. Or was Wednesday, excuse me. They had a wide open look for Ryan Langbord down two, and you just missed it. Northwestern, I actually give a lot of credit. And I've said this on the podcast. I tweeted it today. It's kind of ridiculous, like, the job that Collins has done this year, given what they've been dealing with injuries down the stretch. Like, they've been without, like, you know, multiple starters in a bunch of games. And they're just, like, finding ways to win. And part of that's just Boo is Boo. Like, Boo's been unbelievable. But, like, even outside of him, like, Nick Martinelli, like, you know, I think we talked, like, I was really worried, like, all right, like, what's the future look like for Northwestern? Like, once Boo leaves, they're going to suck again. But Nick Martinelli scored in double figures four straight games, including 27 on the road at Maryland. And it's not like threes. It's like tough middies and, like, floaters and, like, just kind of funky buckets. Ty Berry should be back. Brooks Barnheiser should be back. He's been really good. He's had double digits in five straight games and I think, like, 15 in the last 16. Like, they have, like, a really good nucleus 2, 3, and 4. They just need a five. They probably need an upgrade at the five, but, like, Nicholson and Hunger might be able to do it. And then they could really use a high-level portal point guard. I just don't know who that guy is.
What about I guess it's got to be kind of a high academic guy, right?
It has to be. Well, it has to be a grad. It doesn't have to be a high academic guy.
You can't take a real transfer?
The only transfers that Northwestern can really take are kids who played 1 year and then grads. Like sophomores and sit one play ones you can't do.
Huh.
Because the credits don't transfer.
How much NIL do you have?
Probably lower half of the Big Ten, but not nothing.
Could you put it all together and get like Jeremy Roach or something? Make a Godfather Jeremy offer to
why would Jeremy Roach go to Northwestern?
Think a million will do it?
Why would Northwestern paid Boo Booey $300,000 this year? They're not spending a million on Jeremy Roach.
I said the Godfather offer.
Northwestern should recruit. They need like a grad guy. I wonder, actually, the one kid they might be able to take is Xavier Lee. But I just don't think they can get him. He's like a... I think it's hard with the kids like that, where it's like, Xavier Lee is going to leave Princeton, he should be doing it because he's like, I might make the NBA. I need, like, an elite, you know. I need an elite situation, right? So why would he choose Northwestern? Maybe he does just because of basketball merits, right? Like, theoretically, I guess, like, Northwestern could get him just because, like, all right, like, we're a point guard away from being a tournament team, and you get to, like, you know, come in and start and whatever. Northwestern. Wonder who Northwestern should get.
Keenan Carlisle.
Nah, I should go get Posh.
You don't want Posh.
That'd be great. Posh would kill it.
You want Posh?
No, I don't want Posh. I'm kidding.
You'd be better off with Jaden Pierre than Posh.
Jaden Pierre would be actually fine for Northwestern. That's something they can take him academically. Here's a kid that'd be good for Northwestern. He's very small, but the Colgate Braden Smith, not the Purdue Braden Smith.
Yeah.
He's very good. I watched a lot of their game today. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, now that Washington's open, would you turn the keys for Zoom Diallo or something? Or
Sevier Wheeler? Northwestern can't get any of these kids.
Dude, it's NIL. Anyone can get anyone.
No, you don't understand. Northwestern can't get Jeremy Roach. Northwestern doesn't have the money for these guys.
What's their total budget? Two million?
Definitely not. I don't think their football budget was $2 million.
You just said it was middle of the Big Ten, right?
Yeah, middle of the Big Ten is probably like 115, I think. It's probably middle bottom. It's like probably like 10th. It's better than Minnesota and probably worse than most other teams.
Maybe you can get some money from Julia Louis-Dreyfus or something.
We have lots of celebrities.
Yeah. Did you see this thing that Kenny Payne does not use Louisville's NIL for the basketball team? He uses his own contacts?
It's a bad idea.
What does that even mean? Like, he's asking, like, Anthony Davis, like, for money? Like, what? I don't get...
He supposedly paid Jozan Sanin to, like, stop by on his way to take the visit to Kentucky. And then he lost Carter Knox. So his whole sales pitch of, like, we're going to recruit Jozan Sanin and
Carter Knox,
and they're going to come, and then I'll get my year 30 years is dead.
I guess Trilly was saying that most, like, five-star recruits require being paid to come on a visit.
I think that's generally true. But I also don't know, like, does that mean the Providence is paying for, like, Bryson Tiller and all these kids to come?
That's absolutely why.
Like, but like, okay, but like, then why would, like, if you're Providence, you have like middle of the road NIL, why would you like waste like $100,000 in a year on like convincing like Bryson Tiller to come visit? Like, wouldn't you rather just like.
Wait, you're getting paid $100,000 to visit?
No. But they've had, I mean, how many kids is people, like, Jozan Sanin's visited Providence 20 times, right?
Does that mean he gets like he lives like 20 minutes away.
Sure. But does he not require money?
I assume to go to the games, he just requires a ticket. But like Bryson Tiller, who's in Georgia at Overtime Elite.
Well, yeah, but was that an official visit or an unofficial?
Sanin has not taken an official to Providence.
Yeah, but what about like Tiller, or like the kid?
Tiller was an official. Jeremiah Fears was an official. Weirdly, the two guys they had this weekend, T. Bartlett and Lino Mark, were unofficials coming from California. I don't know how that works, but probably because they paid them.
Maybe. Right. Yeah. Again, I don't understand like the thinking there. Like, why you would spend money. Again, I understand like if you're like really in it and like you had to pay like $5,000 to get a kid to visit and you thought you were gonna get him, like whatever. Like, if you're Providence, it doesn't make sense to spend money to get 5 stars to visit.
Unless maybe it doesn't have to come from NIL. Maybe the school can pay.
I don't know. I don't think a travel
stipend of some sort.
Either way, whole new world. Let's get to some carousel stuff and then wrap it up. I don't know how much is new from last week. I think of the big jobs. Like, I guess like Hopkins is officially out at Washington.
And we, it's an open secret, is Danny Sprinkle.
Danny Sprinkle. I think there's a small chance that Kyle Smith might steal it. But I think it's Danny Sprinkle. Like, it's 99% Danny Sprinkle.
So, and now who are we putting at Utah State?
I don't know. The thing that Utah State is, it's very tricky, because they just keep hiring head coaches who've had success. So, like, who are those guys? Like, out west, that would be what? Like they can't get Bryce Drew.
I think last week we said Russell Turner.
But he's like known as like kind of a dick, and like if he didn't get it the last 3 times, why would he get it this time?
We're doing our 4th coach in 5 years, is that right?
Correct. So that's like a kind of a weird thing. like David Riley is a name potentially, but like, does he get hurt by not having made the tournament?
What about like
combusting?
What about Iran Ganat from Hawaii?
I mean, they had a horrible year this year.
I thought I saw that they were the 3 seed.
Maybe they finished strong. Hold on. I thought they had a horrible year.
I mean, it's been a while since he had that good tournament team with.
They're 19-13. Yeah, I guess they did finish very strong. At one point, they were 4-7 in the league. That's when I looked, because they've been okay since. I don't think he'd have a lot of juice. Like it'd be a little boring. Is there another
won,
like
won a tournament game though? That
sure. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I think David Riley could be a name. Eric Henderson, South Dakota State, could be a name.
Everybody wins there, though.
Correct. And honestly, Hendo's been worse than a lot of the other guys. I think Henderson could be a name at... Henderson could be a name at Southern Illinois as well.
What about
Jared Calhoun?
Yeah, I mean...
If you're willing to hire outside the region, like it's you don't really recruit, like you kind of recruit nationally there.
Very, very niche appeal. But he's clearly a good coach. Like Youngstown State's not supposed to be at the top of that league.
I think Calhoun would be a good like Fresno name.
What about Schertz and DeVries? You'd probably rather have Utah State than St. Louis, right?
DeVries wouldn't take that. No, because Utah State's a $1 million job.
And St. Louis is a $2 million job?
The only reason you're taking St. Louis is like, all right, they'll pay me. Yeah, Utah State's a tricky one. I had one more name I was thinking of that like could be like kind of an interesting...
Chris Holtman?
No, he wouldn't take it. Why would you if you're making...
It's got to be a very appealing springboard, though.
Right, but if you're Chris Holtman, you're making $3 million either way on your buyout. Why would you move to Logan, Utah and work for a year?
I don't remember if it was Holtman, but somebody on one of these search shows said that one of the coaches had a clause in their contract that they had to be working to get the buyout.
Yeah, then he just signs up to be an analyst at, you know, whatever school and make $100,000. And live in Chicago or live in Nashville or live in Miami or...
Or lead the Aggies back to their fifth straight NCAA or fifth tournament in 6 years or whatever it is. Sixth tournament in 7 years, right? Three for Craig Smith, one for Ryan Odom, one for Sprinkle, and one miss for Odom. So this is 5 out of 6 right now.
Right, because they won the Mountain West tournament before COVID hit, right?
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you're right. I'm curious about, like, I don't know. It's a real tricky job. Southern Illinois, I think they want head coaching experience. The one name I will flag for Southern Illinois is Bruce Weber.
That was quite out of left field.
Other than, I think Bruce Weber's a name there. One name I will also mention for Southern Illinois is Preston Spradlin at Moorhead. Done a really good job there.
Bruce Weber, after sitting for 2 years?
He used to work at Southern. A little reunion.
What's going on with Steve Prohm at Murray State? How's that going?
That's what I would tell the AD.
Yeah.
But I'm not the AD, so.
And Preston Spradlin, yeah. I mean,
that'd be a
won
great
a lot. Time. That league is very watered down, but they're close to the top 100 in the net I saw today, so.
They also just do an elite. Think about this. They're basically top 100 in the net, and their preseason player of the year in their league got hurt like 2 weeks before the year and missed the whole season.
Yeah. And you mentioned right, they lost Jani Broom.
Correct.
And Taylon Cooper, right? So
think about how they've recruited. They landed Jani Broom, who turned into an All American. Taylon Cooper turned into like a plus SEC starter. They landed the Riley Minix kid from NAIA. That kid can play anywhere in the country. He's phenomenal. They've like been smart in the portal. They made Jordan Lathan into a good player. I can't believe that Jordan Lathan's still in college. Northwestern legend. Other carousel jobs. I don't know how much.
Can we pivot there? Speaking of, I can't believe they're still in college. I guess Jared Haas is the only person who likes Jared Bynum less than I do. He essentially got kicked off the team, and Jared Bynum's like tweeting through it. And I watched Stanford play against Colorado. They stink. They have so many guys out there that are just terrible. I mean, I think if I were Haas fighting for my job, I think even I would throw Bynum out there. But Stanford is Kyle Smith, we're saying?
Kyle Smith or Mitch Henderson, I think.
Which Mitch Henderson is where we started in whatever May or April of last year when we targeted Haas as a dead man walking.
Yeah, both would be great hires, right? Like, I don't know how, like, I think both would be very, like, would be winners. I am kind of partial. Like, I understand Kyle Smith's really good, but, like, it's ridiculous how good Princeton is. Like, think about this. Last 3 years for Princeton, 2022, they win 23 games. They lose in the Ivy Championship game by two. That team had Jalen Llewellyn, Ethan Wright, Drew Freiberg, Ryan Langborg, Tosan Awoma. Go to the NIT, beat two high majors that year. Like, great year. Next year, lose Freiberg to Belmont, lose Ethan Wright to Colorado, lose Jalen Llewellyn to Michigan. Turn around. Win 23 games, go to the Sweet 16. Beat Arizona in the Sweet 16, right? Like, phenomenal, phenomenal season. They lose Tosan to the draft, Ryan Langborg to Northwestern, Keyshawn Kelman to Florida Gulf Coast. All right, surely they'll take a little bit of a step back, right? No, sir. 24-3 this season. 24-3. And all these dudes are studs. Like, Alaco's really good. Caden Pierce is phenomenal. Like, how about this? Princeton, in the same recruiting class, landed Caden Pierce, a 6'7" kid who has a top 15 defensive rebounding rate in the country, is top 100 in true shooting, is a 20% assist rate guy, shoots 36% from three and 60% from two, had 32-9-4 yesterday. And Xavien Lee, who is maybe the best ISO scorer in the country, is an elite point guard, Canada national team, like the whole bit. Like, ridiculous what he has done there, right? Like, to the point of, like, even without the high major label, if you just recruited all of these same players to Princeton, to Stanford, which theoretically all of them would choose Stanford, you'd win. Like, Princeton is several spots in is I think like 50 spots above Stanford and KenPom. And Stanford has Stojakovic and Carlisle and Spencer Jones and Brandon Angel and all these dudes. So just like, again, just hire Mitch.
How about Xavien Lee, 5 points a game last year? Because I was about to ask you, like, was he on that Princeton team last year?
He was. He was your backup point guard.
Instead, I decided to look it up myself and be self-sufficient. And, yeah, bench player last year. Now people mention him as like an NBA prospect type of guy.
He's really good. Really good.
Yeah, this year he's at 18 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. So quite the jump. This James Madison game is down the wire here.
Yes. I think they're in survival mode at the moment. In okay shape, just gotta like not screw it up. Let's see, what else is shaking in the carousel? It's Missouri State. Ben McCollum is the name you will hear a lot there. William and Mary Higher Academic. Obviously, same with Loyola Maryland. Both are academic jobs. Some buzz about a bunch of Philly schools. Been talking about Penn. Been talking about LaSalle. Been talk about Drexel potentially opening.
Drexel was good this year.
Not good enough, apparently. Duquesne could be a retirement.
Then LeBron wants his buddy to be the coach, right? He's currently the assistant.
Drew Joyce. To be determined. Look, it'll be interesting. A lot of, you know, we'll see what happens at Siena. I still think it'd be crazy to fire Carm.
Is Sean Miller still on watch for Ohio State, or is that Dusty's job to lose?
I think it's Dusty.
And then we're going to keep Juwan at Michigan just because they won the football championship, so why care?
I still think there's a chance that Juwan gets bounced, but I don't know how it would go down.
Any retirement watch? I saw Field of 68 saying Larinaga's coming back.
Larinaga's back. Leonard Hamilton, I don't know how it'll be framed, but he's done. Fran Dunphy would be a retirement at LaSalle. Dan Brod, I think, would be framed as a retirement at Duquesne. I mean, they had a good year, won 20 games.
Okay, so if Hamilton is done, are we still on? Think I heard people saying, like, Chris Mack, potentially.
Chris Mack. I could see Amir. I could see Jerome Tang at Florida State.
Okay, that's someone who has quieted down a lot on the carousel. Hot name early.
Weird. People really. I still think there's a chance Jerome Tang's like the Louisville coach, which I wouldn't do because I'm not sure he's like. I'm less convinced he's hot shit now.
Yeah. So West Virginia and Louisville are both going mid-major, we think, at this point.
West Virginia, I'm very confident is going mid-major. Louisville, I think there's a chance winds up high major, but I think there's a decent chance it's mid.
Who else? Well, I guess if Amir Abdur-Rahim goes to Florida State, we'll say, who I'm glad that they lost. Because that team, they purposefully gave them the easiest schedule they could, and they still screwed up with how many quad 3 and 4 losses, and people were trying to glorify that team. But let's say Amir Abdur-Rahim goes to Florida State, Dusty goes to Ohio State. Do we have names for Florida Atlantic and South Florida? Would it be internal, or could we see some movement?
If it could be internal for – I don't think South Florida would be internal. I think there's a chance that Florida Atlantic would be with Kyle Church. Florida Atlantic, though, is – I mean, it's a real wild card. Their AD is a white. You know, that's the big fan and one of the, you know, first families of college athletics. I'll tell you this. I would not be surprised if the next head coach at Florida Atlantic is Josh Ertz.
That'd be interesting.
Him and Dusty are great friends.
And you would rather have Florida Atlantic than St. Louis?
See, I think I'd probably rather have St. Louis in a vacuum, but Ertz is an alum. Like, there's a lot of ties there, and if you wanted FAU, it'd be like over, you know?
The Americans is in such a weird place. I don't know what to make of any of these jobs.
I even feel this way about like the A-10 right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's a 15 team league. Like Loyola's, how about this? Loyola Chicago has been to a Final Four and a Sweet 16 in the last, you know, 6-7 years. They're 23-8 this year in a league with 8 top 100 teams, and they have zero chance of making the NCAA tournament without an auto bid. Like they're on the NIT bubble. And again, you know, you flip the UIC game and they're in, you know, whatever the NIT comfortably. Like there was like basically no path for Loyola to be an at-large team this year by going 15-3 in the A-10. Same with Richmond, right? And it's all the teams are competitive. Everyone invests in basketball. Like it's a tricky thing.
First, they should do a little contraction, right? Like the A-10 should say, Fordham, LaSalle, we're sorry, but you guys got to go. That'll get them down to 12. Say College Charleston State, stay where you're at. Who cares? And kind of roll with those 12. I bet they'll have a better chance of getting a second bid with 12 than the 15.
I think you're right, but I think people, like, one, it's not easy to kick teams out of conferences.
It will be once the SEC kicks out Vanderbilt and whoever else is the low-hanging fruit.
I mean, I'm not convinced that that happens, but sure.
And speaking of teams we need to get rid of, Paint Touches, which is a Marquette blog.
Sure.
They do a great job. They always post the ratings, the television ratings. The 10 worst Big East broadcasts this year, like conference games, 7 of them included DePaul.
Yes, but the most watched game last year involved DePaul.
Because it was on Christmas Day after an NFL game.
Yes.
DePaul needs to go. It's not, I don't see how you can argue otherwise. Nobody wants to watch their games, like, empirically. No one's watching them. No one goes to the games. They can't win a game. They're sub 300. It's been 20 years. Get them out of here. Having said that, who's their next coach who's going to spend next 4 or 5 years of his life losing 80% of his games?
I was thinking Porter.
That's one I'm going to have to see it to believe it. I'm going to have to see not Trilly Donovan. I'm going to have to see Jeff Goodman, Borzello, Gary Parrish, John Rothstein, all tweet at once that Kevin Porter Sweeney. Mosier is the next coach at DePaul.
Does a Kevin Sweeney tweet not count?
No, you could tweet it too. That's fine. I saw people giving you shit about your West Virginia tweet the other day.
Yeah, it was stupid. I'm right. These people are idiots.
Going a little semantics here that West Virginia hasn't chosen their next coach? Or is it true?
It's true. They have not chosen. West Virginia has made no decisions. The concept that West Virginia has some handshake deal with Mark Byington is patently false. West Virginia has not. The athletic director at West Virginia has not said a word to Mark Byington in his life.
You better get on that.
Huh?
You better get on that.
That's what I tweeted.
Yeah.
Like, it drives me nuts.
Porter Mosier to DePaul. My God.
What happened?
No, I'm saying you saying Porter Mosier to DePaul. I'm saying, like, oh, my God.
It is wild.
That is, it's going to be great for the Big East brand. I'll tell you that much. And then who gets Oklahoma? I saw someone saying earlier Buzz Williams.
How about hilarious. Kellen Sampson?
With all due respect to Kellen Sampson, what about Kellen Sampson makes an SEC team want Kellen Sampson as their next coach?
I mean, look, his last name, in fact, he's been a part of the best program in the country.
Points to Kyle Neptune, Baker Dunleavy, Ashley Howard.
Yeah,
George Halkovich.
Specific thing to Jay Wright.
Speaking of which, if Villanova misses, is Neptune still safe?
Yes. One more year.
Oof. Is this going to be a thing where, like, let's say Villanova gets an 11 seed this year and, like, an 11 seed next year? Is, like, he's safe as long as he makes the tournament, or is this kind of like, get elite quick or you're done?
I don't know. I don't really have a great pulse for that.
See anything else?
I think we can wrap it up. It's a good show. Right. When we pot again, we'll have a bracket in hand, folks. Should be fun. See y'all then.
Are we doing Sunday night or are you on some sort of radio?
We on Field of 68. Let's do Monday.
All right.
We will see you all probably then Tuesday. We'll be on this podcast on your podcast app. So enjoy that.